The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Ninon Kalazan. I'm working for Arachim. I'm usually giving lectures in Arachim seminars and Arachim classes. And Rabbi Cohen asked me to cover today a few things. I don't know how much time you have. I have all night. We'll see how much we... usually it's around an hour or so. Less? More? Okay, we'll see. I want to cover, I think, I mean, from a huge material, we'll give just a few examples, but let me start with a few... with introduction. I know, as probably you know, that in the Frum system, in the Frum school system, in the Frum community, we have a problem that many people just, you know, ignore and think by ignoring that it not exists. Our kids have questions. Sometimes they scared to ask them about emunah, about the basic principle, philosophical principles in Judaism. Sometimes they scared to ask. Sometimes they think mistakenly that it's not right to ask. But the questions are there, and if we will not address them, we are not solving the problem. We are just ignoring from something that's very, very important. In my experience in Arachim, I found that the best approach to be mekarev rechoikim is to put everything on the table and just present the question even better than they think and shows the answers. Of course, in the Frum community, you have to do it in a very delicate way, in a way that will not cause more harm than help, but we have to address those questions. In order to address them, we have to know the answers for ourselves. For many generations, the idea or the assumption was, you know, if you learn Torah, you're in it, all the problems, all the questions, mimela will not be there. The more you will learn, the more you'll be. But we're facing a problem, and we have to address it, and we have to know, at least for us, for ourselves, that we have confidence in the answers and the way the Torah sees things. Judaism in general never ran away from facing intellectual challenges. During the history, many aspects, the Christians, the Karaim, all the groups that made challenges to the rabbis, and we have answers for everything. In the Jewish philosophy, in the Machshavas Yisrael, we have many books that deals with every question that ever asked. Since who says that there is God, and what was exactly in Mamad al-Sinai, what Hashem really gave us, Torah shebichtav, Torah shebal peh, all those questions addressed in the past, but it's written in a language that needs cultivating to our way of thinking and to our language. And that, Baruch Hashem, what we did very successfully with the help of Hashem in Arachim in the last 30 years, among non-Frum, people who just enter. You know, here in America, you could divide the Jewish community to Frum and non-Frum. In Israel, it's not like this. You have either you're Frum or you enter. So, and we deal with the tough crowd of the Israelis who are anti. They just, you know, you have to really show them everything from scratch. So I want to show you here two things from two topics that we usually cover in a seminar. Our seminars for non-Frum people take not less than 3 days, 3.5 days to cover the basic material. From everything, I think if we are realistic, we could cover two things. One is this, the prophecies in the Tanakh, in the Torah and the Tanakh. And before we go to examples, let me just explain what is the method over here. We want to show that when you check, when you learn, when you check, when you criticize, the quality of the information in the Torah, you could get to the conclusion that in order to know this information, you have to know the future and to control the history and the law of nature, which is the attribute of God. So we want to show that it's divine. The Torah is divine. No any human being ever could write these things. And we have many examples. We have many examples of this. We have to know that the Torah is not, that wasn't the purpose of the Torah. The translation, the accurate translation of the word Torah is directions. And this is actually what's the basic meaning of the Torah, to give us directions, how to behave, how to run our life. But among the information we have, we took those kind of information that shows or prove this point, the quality of the information shows that the source that gave it ran the history and controlled the history. Now, we know today a lot in science about the world, about the universe. We know today much more than we knew 5 years ago. Of course, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago. So we have accumulated knowledge that today we know. We know also that there is a lot of things that we do not know. Those things, this group of things that we do not know, could be divided into two groups. Things that we do not know yet, and things that we will never know. And if you'll ask me, how do we know that there are things that we will never know? The answer will be, if you know, how do you know? You know what you will never know. And what we could say for sure, that we will never know the future. That we could say for sure. Because the future never happened yet. And the future is very open. I mean, because there is a free will, nobody knows the future. Knows, I mean, 100%. Not assumption, speculation, or things like this. No. We know that we will never know the future. Even today, of course in the past, probably in the future also, something dramatically has to happen in order to change this. Okay? Now, there are many areas, until today, some of them are very popular even today, of people who claim that they could tell you what's going to happen in the future. Astrology, you know, people who has ways, has powers. If you logically put all those claims and methods and promises test them, you could find out what the Rambam wrote more than 800 years ago, and it's accurate and right until today. The Rambam make a parable between Nevuah, what we have in the Tanakh, the Nevi'im, that give us scenarios about what's going to happen, and astrologists. And he said with his cynical way, sometimes the Rambam is very sharp and very cynical, he said like this, the best mark that we could give to a good astrologist is how less he is lying. Which means, if he will give you 10 things, and he'll say, you know, in the next year, in the next 10 years, those list of 10 things will happen. If one of them will happen, he is good. Two of them, he is great. But it never ever happened that he will give you 10 things or 5 things even, and all of them will happen. It's never happened. Now, if you compare it to the Nevuah claims the same thing. What the Nevuah says, Hashem talked to us, and he told us what's going to happen, right? Let me show you something that you for sure know, but it's really important to see it in your eyes. I hope you read Hebrew, I assume. Okay? I'll translate if it's needed. Oh, I don't have it over here in this one. Okay, let me just quickly move to a different place. The Rambam brings the criteria of who could be a Navi. And he says like this, that the minimum that we ask from a Navi, okay, the Rambam is here down, let me just quote it before that, okay? In the Navi, it's mentioned in Melachim Bet Perik Yud Pasuk Yud, Ki lo yipol midvar Hashem arza. Ki lo yipol midvar Hashem arza. If Hashem promised through the Nevi'im that something will happen, it has to happen in the complete way. Ki lo yipol, nothing will drop from what Hashem promised that's going to happen. In the Haftarah, Birkot Haftarah, we said in Shul, in Shabbos, V'davar echad midvarecha, achor lo yashuv rekam. Even one thing. And now the Rambam in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah beperek Yud, he says like this: Kol Navi sheyamod lanu veyomar shehashem shlacho, eino tzarich lasot ot keechad meotot Moshe Rabbeinu o keotot Eliyahu veElisha sheyesh bahem shinui minhago shel olam. That's not the thing. Do miracles. Ela haot shelo. What will be the sign or the proof that he is a Navi? Sheyomar dvarim ha'atidim liyot ba'olam veyamnu dvarav. Of course, before he gives few criteria, who could even claim to be a Navi? He has to be Chacham, he has to be Gibor, lo yitgaber alav yitzro b'shum devar ba'olam, and a lot of things. He has to be a tremendous guy for his personality. And it has to be in the time that there is Nevuah. After the destruction of Bayit Rishon, no more Nevuah. So if at the time that there is Nevuah, somebody who is reliable told us that he is a Navi, how are we checking him? We're asking him, tell us what's going to happen in the time that we could check you, not what's going to happen in another 100 years. What's going to happen in the next month? And he has to say something that, for sure, it's something that not somebody could guess, right? Ela ot shelo sheyomer dvarim ha'atidim liyot ba'olam ve'yeamnu dvarav. Yeamnu dvarav, we check them and we find it's right. Omrim lo, im navi ata, emor dvarim ha'atidim liyot ve'hu omer. Ve'anu mechakim lir'ot, ha'yavau dvarav, im lo yavau. We're waiting to check it. ואפילו נפל דבר קטן בידוע שהוא נביא שקר. Even one small thing, one small detail is not right, we know for sure that he is נביא שקר. So this is an amazing way to check or to check what's the difference between all those people who claim that they know the future. They do not even claim that they could tell you 100%. They could not claim it, they're not claiming it, and for sure it's proved that it's not right. So, and by the Nevuah, the minimum that required from the Navi is the maximum of the details to be fulfilled. Okay? Now, after we present this criteria in front of people who has doubts, they say, okay, go ahead, show us. And here we have a list of many, many Nevuot. I choose only one because we do not have more than that. More in the time that we have here. So, let's see it. The Nevuah belongs to those days too. We are in between Shivasa Betamos and Tisha B'Av. And in Tisha B'Av we remember the destruction of Bet HaMikdash and the Golus. I want to show you something that not too known. It's not one of the famous things, but it's very, very strong, very powerful. Moshe Rabbeinu promised the Jewish people, Bnei Israel, before. Moshe Rabbeinu never entered the land, Eretz Israel, and he promised them in the Torah that Eretz Israel is going to be a very good quality. The ground will be very good quality for agriculture. Let's see a few psukim. Ki Hashem Elohecha mevi'acha el Eretz Tova, Eretz Nachalei Maim, עיינות ותאומות יוצאים בביקה ובהר, ארץ חיטה ושעורה וגפן ותאנה ורימון, ארץ זה שמן ודבש. Good land. If you need the translation, which I think here it's unnecessary. Okay. In another place in Sefer Shmot, El Eretz Tova Urechava El Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. So Eretz Yisrael is a good land compared to the desert that you are here now. We talk to Bnei Israel and even to Eretz Mitzrayim. Okay, now we find that it was right. Few psukim from different times in the history, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, we find in Sefer Melachim, Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim kachol asher al sfat hayam, ochlim v'shutim usmachim, v'yashev Yehuda v'Yisrael levetach ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'enato. So, it was good life of agriculture and the economy, it was good. The economic situation was very good compared to our days, look at this. וכל כלי משקי המלך שלמה זהב וכל כלי בית יער הלבנון which is בית המקדש זהב סגור אין כסף לא נחשב בימי שלמה למאומה. No word for money. More than that, ויתן המלך את הכסף בירושלים כאבנים. It was like stones. So it was good. So Hashem promised us good land and it was really, it's right. That's not a nevuah. Here is the point. In the nevuah satoichicha, in Vayikra, Parashat Bechukotai, in Dvarim, Parashat Ki Tavo, Hashem made the condition, and here we ask the question like this. I mean, I'll just present it the way I present it to intelligent, non-from Jew, but intelligent. We're checking, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu just invented the Torah, right? This is the thing that we're dealing with. He has to be really stupid, Moshe Rabbeinu, to promise the thing that I'm going to show you, if he made it out of his mind. He says in the Torah, Vayikra en dvarim, Im bechukotai telechu ve'et mitzvotai tishmeru ve'asitam otam, yishavtem levetach ba'artzachem, you will sit secure in the land, ve'natna aretz yevula, et esadet en b'yo, all the promises, all the good things will happen to you. You will have a good situation economically, you'll be secure, nobody will fight you, right? Only if you will fulfill the covenant that you sign on Har Sinai, Na'aseh Nishma. If not, as a nation, if not, not as individual, as a nation, if you will not fulfill it, will be a lot of things that are going to happen to you, very bad things. One of them will be the exile. You will not stay in the place. You will be chased out of the land, and the land will be destroyed. And here, I want to point out very interesting thing that we talk about the land. Now, according to our experience, a good land, agriculture-wise, will stay like that forever unless some catastrophic, like Hafichat Sdom Va'amora or atomic bomb, will just destroy the ability of the land to be fruitful or to be good the way it used to be. So here in the Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll show you the psukim from Vayikra. Okay, we'll get back to this later. In Vayikra, Vashimoti ani et haaretz, veshamemu aleha oivechem hayoshvim ba, vehayta artzechem shmama, veharechem yehu chorba. If you will not fulfill your part in the covenant that you signed in Mamad Har Sinai, you will be chased out of the land. What's going to happen to the land at the time? The land will be deserted. And your enemies will come. And they will sit in it, but they could not make it give the fruit as in your times. It will be shmama, it will be deserted. Now, it's very important to see this. The Gemara in Masechet Ketubot says, we saw before that at the time of Bayit Rishon, in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, it was the Nevuah was right, right? It was good land and everybody was happy. There is an interesting Gemara from the time of Bayit Sheni and a little bit after. Rami Bar Yecheskel, he's the man of Bnei Brak of the time. Ra'izim she'ochlot tachat ha'emim. והיה דבש נוטף מן התאנים וחלב מטפטף מן העיזים ומתערבבים זה בזה. אמר, זהו זבת חלב ודבש. So we see it. We see it clearly. It's not just you could see. You could see the milk. You see the דבש. You see the honey. Fine. At the same time, Josephus Flavius, and here is a source from outsources, right? People want to see, not just from the Torah. So, Josephus Flavius, Yosef ben Matityahu, he was a Jew. In the beginning, he fought against the Romans. Then he became a historian in the Roman service. So he wrote in his book, Milchamot HaYehudim, he described, and be aware of the land, of the part of the land in Eretz Yisrael that he describes here. Ki kula Eretz Deshena, you have it over here in English. He described the land of the Galilee as a very good place. People who do not like agriculture, but if they want to make money, they will come become agriculturists. And he described over here a part of the Galilee, right? Fine. He said that, okay, fine, Aragali. Now, this is at the end of the time of Beit Shemesh. Now, the Torah says that if the Jews will not behave, they will be chased out of the country. And in this time, the country will be deserted when the Jews will not be on it. And nobody could make it flourish again. And if your enemies will come, they will sell it when it's deserted. To promise such a thing, it's a committing suicide. How could you promise such a thing? In order to promise this, you need control on the land, control on the agriculture. Nobody has it. So, two questions. How he promised such a thing? Why people accepted from him? And what really happened? We know that the land was deserted for 70 years between the Beit Rishon and Beit Sheni. But since Beit Sheni until today, until 100 years ago, we know what the history says. Something, you could check it, right? Now be aware, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael, we're talking before the discoverer of America and Australia. So all the places, and where Eretz Yisrael located? Exactly in the center between three major continents, Africa, Asia, and Europe, right? So even strategically, any empire will make the place the center of the empire. More than that, right after the destruction of the second Beit Sheni, Christianity became a big religion. Islam later on became a big religion, and both of those religions has a holy places, quote-unquote, in Eretz Israel. So, naturally, they should make the place the center of the religion, or the center of the life. What really happened? Since after the destruction of Beit Sheni and destruction of Beitar, which was few decades after, Eretz Israel became deserted, and stayed deserted until today, until 100 years ago. So, first of all, it's a risk to say it, but I want to show you something amazing that's written in the Torah. The Ramban says in Parashat Vayikra, he says like this: "V'chen ma she'amar b'chan v'shamemu alei oyvechem." In the Toichacha, the Ramban says it's a good news. He besorah tova mevaseret bechol hagaluyot she'en arzenu mekabelet et oyveinu. The Ramban wrote it 700 years ago, after the Islam was exist for at least 600 years, and of course the Christianity, right? So he said it's a good news that Eretz Israel will never accept our enemies. וגם זו ראייה גדולה והבטחה לנו, כי לא תמצא בכל היישוב ארץ אשר הייתה טובה ורחבה, ואשר הייתה נושבת מעולם והיא חרבה כמותה. You cannot find such a thing. No other example of place that used to be populated, and now it's not. כי מאז יצאנו ממנה לא קיבלה אומה ולשון, וכולם משתדלים להושיבה, ואין לאל ידם. They do not succeed to do it. And the Ramban wrote it, remember, the Ramban, at the end of his days, went to Eretz Israel, and he died in Eretz Israel. So when he came to Eretz Israel, he sent, by the way, I don't have it right over here, he sent a letter to his son. And in the letter, he described what he see, and he said, כל המקודש מחברו, חרב יותר מחברו. So he described the country as a deserted place, and he said it's a good news. It's shows that Eretz Israel belongs to us and will not give its power to any other nation. Now, there is a pasuk in Devarim. In Perek Kaftet in Devarim, after Parashat Tochicha Bedvarim is in Parashat Kitavo. In Perek Kafchet. In Perek Kaftet, a chapter after, the Torah says like this, Ve'amar la'dor ha'acharon. Moshe Rabbeinu talked about the last generation of the Jewish people. Ve'amar la'dor ha'acharon, Bneichem asher yakumu me'acharichem, Ve'hanochri asher yavo me'eretz rechoka. So he talked about two kind of people. The Yidden at the end of days, and non-Jews that will come from, be aware of this, from very far land, and they will visit Eretz Yisrael at the end of days. ואמר הדור האחרון, בניכם אשר יקומו מאחריכם ואנוכי אשר יבוא מארץ רחוקה, וראו את מכות הארץ ההיא ואת החלואיה אשר חילה השם בה. גופרית ומלח שריפה כל ארצה לא תזרע ולא תצמיח ולא יעלה בכל עשב. They will find it burned with salt. It's very interesting. I mean, what the Torah describes, salt. I don't know how many of you, I'm Israeli, but I don't know how many of you knows the history of the people who came 100 years ago to Eretz Israel and tried to make it an agricultural land, right? What they found? They find salt, they find Anopheles, which is all this machalot that was there at the time, and many of them die of those. There is a yeshuv in the north of Yam HaMelech called Bet HaArava, I think it's a kibbutz. In order to make it agricultural, they have to wash the salt from the ground, and they really did, and it's a famous story. And the Torah wrote it 3,000 years ago. וראו את מכות הארץ ואת החלואיה אשר חילה השם בה, גופרית ומלח שרפה כל ארצה לא תזרע ולא תצמיח ולא יעלה בה כל עשב, כמהפכת סדום ועמורה ודמות צבאים אשר הפך השם באפו ובחמתו. Now, he doesn't say like this. Hashem says in the Torah more than that. ואמרו כל הגויים, what will be their conclusion from what they see? על מה עשה השם ככה לארץ הזאת? מחורי האף הגדול הזה. ואמרו, what will be their מסקנה, their conclusion? על אשר עזבו את ברית השם אלוקי אבותם אשר קראתי מהם והוציאו אותם מארץ מצרים. It's not, it doesn't make sense. It's not natural. It's a curse. A curse that God cursed this country. Now I want to show you an amazing document. I will not read it. It's in English. You could read it. It's in front of you. You know the author. He is Gentile, came from very far land, visited Eretz Yisrael more than 100 years ago. More than 100 years ago, just 100 years ago. And he saw the land. And without knowing all of this, look what he says. I'm talking about Mark Twain. So here is it. He described the same place that Josephus described before, that about 2,000 years ago, almost 1,900 years ago, was so flourished, right? He described it as a deserted, totally deserted, not even Zait. I'd say Zait, anybody who knows the in Eretz Yisrael, I'd say Zait, in the Galil Malebat Zait, many, he didn't find even one. Everything was deserted. So he came, Mark Twain, from America, all the way, not with airplanes. He came to the place, he saw the country, and that was his impression. But he went into a conclusion. He says over here somewhere, here, Palestine is desolated. Anyway, he talked about curse. It's a curse. It's that in the beginning he described it like this. Okay, it's not okay. In the translation, they just missed this. If you know the Hebrew, Eretz Shmama she'admata ashira lemadai. So he was aware that the potential is there, but it's deserted. And this does not make sense. So the conclusion. So we could see that the Torah described not just what the Yidden at the end of days will. Even the Gentile that would come from Eretz Rechuka and Milanu, more foreigner than Mark Twain, that came from so far away and he saw, and he described it, and the Torah described it 3,000 years ahead. So this is a nevuah. But it's not just, in order to fulfill this nevuah, you need control on the nature. So this is one of the major things, one of many examples, that shows that the quality of the information in the Torah shows who is the author. Yeah.
Did you show the last slide? You can see the excerpt where it's from.
The what?
The very last.
Where the excerpt is from.
Yeah. Okay, there are many, many more examples. I'll give only one now because we have to move to the other thing, other angle, totally different angle. I just mentioned that there is a nevuah in the Torah that at the end of days, the Jewish people will leave everything. We leave the Torah, but there will be one thing that they will never give up, and this is Brit Milah. And it's written very clearly. If you want, I could find it and show you what the Ramban says about it. In Shir HaShirim, he talks about this. He quotes a pasuk in Nevuat Zechariah. And, you know, it's strong enough to show you. Just a second. I will find it. Oh, no, I don't have it over here. Anyway, I have it in the Hebrew one. Okay. Here's the pasuk. Zechariah in Perek Tet talk about the end of days, Nevuot Achrit Hayamim. And he says like this, Gam at bedam britech, shilachti asiraich mibor en maim bo. He talk about the Yidden when they, in exile, the parable over here, that they are like prisoners in jail. Prisoner is somebody who commits a crime. For this, he paid that he stayed in jail. So the Jewish people are the prisoners in jail, and the jail is everywhere but Eretz Israel. This is the jail. And he talked about when the time will come that you will be sent back to your home. So he talked like this. He talked to Yerushalayim, to Eretz Israel. And he said like this, Gam at bedam britech, shilachti asiraich mibo en maim bo. Bo is a jail. Remember by Yosef, usually, probably at the old time, they made jails deep in the ground so it would be more complicated for the prisoners to run away. So the bow is the gola. And maim bo, the Gemara said, ve'en maim el ha-Torah she'nemar hoi kol tzame lechul ha-maim. So this is the pasuk. He talked about the geula in Achrit Hayamim, that the asirim, the prisoner will come back, they will come out of the bow, from the diaspora, when in the diaspora will be no water. No water means no Torah. So that could be, after you know the history, you could put anything, you could quote any pasuk and just give it an interpretation. We know that Yidden came back to Eretz Israel in the last 100 years, following the Enlightenment and leaving out everything. But something they left, even the anti, the extreme anti, is Brit Milah. They still, and when we present it to none from people who ask them, why you do Brit Milah? You do not believe in anything, right? No God. The Torah is all stories. Why you do Brit Milah to your son? And they do it even in the kibbutzim. So when we want to be very cynical and very sarcastic, as typical Israelis, it's, we present it like, you know, it's a child abuse. You do not believe in it. Let this kid grow up and ask him, why you just do it on him? Right? And it's irreversible.
What they say for hygiene?
What they answer?
Many stupid answers. One, it's not because of religion reason. It's healthy. I asked them, I want to meet one secular person who made Brit Milah to his son for health reasons. One, could you show me why? I want his number. Why by Mohel? And they do it by Mohel. They're not doing it by doctor. So don't tell me stories.
Because America so needs doctors.
Yeah, but another thing. The whole story about health reasons is a discovery of the last 30 years. That if you take out the orla, you could save yourself from dangers of certain kind of cancer. But not from people who started to be not from 300 years ago. Much longer before any discovery about cancer at all. So don't tell me stories. The other thing they say, you know what, we do not know that this guy will face problems when we want to get married in this country, in Israel. To get married is according to the religion, so they're making problem if we will be Arel without a... So I ask them, you know what, you asked the wrong person. My father, Olav Shalom, used to be a menahel of Machleket HaNisuin Shel HaMoetzah HaDatit BiYerushalayim. Anybody who wants to get married has to come to open a file, right? And I remember as a kid, I was going to my father's office, and I knew by heart all the questions that they ask anybody who wants to get married. They ask a lot of questions. They never ask the groom to take off his pants. So no, nobody will know that you are nuts. So don't tell me stories. Why are you doing that? And they have no answer. They do not know what to say. You know, according to, so now I want to show you something amazing. People could say, you know what, after you know that, you know the history. You know that it was enlightenment, people left the Torah. You know that they left Brit Milah. We could not explain it, but you know it now. So you could find any pasuk in the Torah, and you said to me that this is what the pasuk says like this. The prisoner, which is the Jews, at the end of days, will have no Torah and Mayim Bul, will be no Torah, and the only zchus that will have will be Dam Brit, which is Brit Milah, right? And you want to present it as a proof, as a nevuah? This is a speculation. Everybody could do it. You could pick up things from the history, even weird one, and could find for anything, any passage that you want from the Tanakh. And here is the nuclear bomb that we send to the room. I could know it now, today, not right? In the pasuk, it's written vaguely, but this pasuk could bear a lot of other interpretations. But here I want to show you something. Remember the Ramban, we talked about him before? The Ramban passed away more than 700 years ago. That's for sure. And the Ramban wrote a comment on the Torah and the Tanakh. I want to show you what the Ramban wrote on this fossil before the Enlightenment, before non from people come to Eretz Yisrael and decide to build it, not from religion reasons, and the funny thing that they left everything but Brit Milah. Look at the Ramban on this fossil. The Ramban is on Shir HaShirim Perek Hei, the Perusho LeShir HaShirim. גם את בדם בריתך שילחתי אסירייך. says the Ramban, רמז בכאן על עקבות משיח, שיהיה הדור כולו חייב, ותשתקח תורה מישראל, ותרבה החוצפה והעזות, כדכתיב מבור אין מים בו, ולא יישאר בידם רק זכות מצוות מילה. That's Ramban. And that was written more than 700 years ago. How he could know. And he said that it's not that the Ramban said this. The Ramban explained that Zechariah said this. So it's not 100 years old Nevuah, because Ramban was not a Navi. It's more than 2,300 years Nevuah in the Tanakh. So this is another one from a series of, in a seminar we approximately give at least between 20 to 30 examples of very, very strong points that shows clearly that the quality of the information, if you check it, you could see that it's not just knowledge, but controlling the history. There are prophecies and nevuot and scenarios about the Holocaust, about the Nazis, about many things, about the Romans, about the exiles, about Christianity and Islam, many things. We, of course, choose only the sharp one, the strong one that nobody could argue, but when you present it in intellectual knowledge, you know, any honest non-frum that intelligent knows after that he has no free will to have doubt if there is God or if he gave the Torah. Okay? So we could use this information even in our machane. We could just give ourselves the chizuk that we could prove that the Torah emes, and of course it's our obligation to give it to our students, our kids, to make them proud. We have something that could prove itself. We have the Torah could prove its realness. Okay, so that was one thing called prophecies. I gave two examples. I meant to give one. Now, my question is to you. I could do it short, but it depends how much time you have. There is another amazing thing that maybe Rabbi Shkoyim talked about it yesterday. Something that we called bearers of the torch, which is showing the unbroken chain of what we got in Har Sinai and how today we have the exact, accurate, authentic thing that we got in Har Sinai. So I could do it brief or a little more than brief. Of course, to give the entire thing, I need 2 hours of lecture only on this topic, but this is something very strong. It's amazingly strong. You know, after that, you have no free will, no free choice. Let's go to this. Carson, you will tell me during the how much we could go on it. To say it in a short way, there are two major problems that any intelligent person faces when he talk about any religion in the world. The two major problems are how it started and how do we know that during the time there is no major change that makes anything that started looks funny because of the broken chain, the broken phone, and other things. So here I just mentioned the Kuzari, and this very choshuv crowd knows about the Kuzari. You remember the story of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the beginning. It was very smart in high level standard of morality king who decided to look for the truth and run his kingdom according to the truth that he believed in. And he has a message in the dream that really bothers him. Kavanatcha retzuya, aval ma'asecha inam retzuyim. What happens? You really strive to do good, but you do not successfully doing it. So that makes him reopen everything that he believes in and try to look for the absolute truth. So he asked the philosophers told him, forget it, no such a thing. Kol echad v'aymet shelo, everybody, just be good. Feel that you're good, that's okay. He said, no, I want something solid. So then he went to the religion, all the religions claim something amazing in a way that passed by the problems of the philosophers. Philosophers, in order, the tool that they use to verify the truth is their mind and the knowledge that they know. The problem is that the knowledge is increasing from year to year, day to day. And if you want to be honest, you could not just ignore anything that you learn, that the human race learned about the nature, and just, you know, be stuck in theories that you have 50 years ago. You have to be updated. That's why it changed from day to day, from So philosophy doesn't have absolute truth. They could not, because they use their mind. What the religion claim, every religion, we know the absolute truth, not because of what? It's not because we're smart, because we had a revelation from the first cause, the cause of the universe. He revealed himself to us and told us what he meant. So we have the absolute truth. What's the problem with this? There are more than one who claim that, and everybody who claim give another different theory. So what will be the conclusion? Either all of them are a bunch of liars who just want to sell their theories in the name of God, or maybe one is right and all the other are copying the original one. So he started his journey by asking questions to all those representatives. He interviewed the Christian, he interviewed the Islam. All of them, when they got to the major question, he asked them two things. Do you know the truth? Yes. What is it? They give him the list or the ideas. Now we got to the major question. Could you prove it to me? I want to be sure. Could you prove that your theory is right? What was the answer of all of them? You have to believe. Thank you. What do you mean you have to believe? I want to be sure. What do you mean? Why to believe you more to believe than the others, right? Do you have proofs? So Christianity fell because of this problem. Islam fell because of the problem. Before they went out, they told them, listen, it's serious. You have to take it seriously. You know why? Because it's based on the revelation at Sinai that the Old Testament talked about. So all of them just sent them back to Mamad al-Sinai. So at the end, he said, you know what? There is something else left. Maybe there are Jews. So he invited the Jew, the scholar, the Chaver, and he asked him all the questions. He was sure that he's going to fail again when he will ask him at the end to believe. But he was surprised. Could you prove it to me? Yes, of course. Really? Do you know what proof is? Yes. Okay. And they start a very interesting journey, which brought us the Kuzari, the book of the Kuzari. He asked a lot of questions. He get a complete answer about each of them. And he was convinced at the end, this is the truth. Right? Now, as I mentioned before, all the religions in the world talk about absolute truth. But the weak base is that it's all based on faith, on blind faith. You just have to accept it. You accept it, fine. You do not. You know what's the problem of a rational person with such a requirement? It says, in other words, don't ask questions. Just accept it. A rational person could not give up the only thing that he appreciates, which is the mind, which is the sechel, which is asking questions. What do you mean don't ask questions? How do I know that you're not just imagine the things? Right? So this is the problem. This is what we call the akev achilas, the weak point in religions. Now, all the religions suffer from the same problem. Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, any religion. But at the end, they will tell you, you have to believe. Apparently, Judaism is also, right? We base everything about emunah. Really, I want to show you something amazing. Even the claim is amazing. When Moshe Rabbeinu first met Hashem at the burning bush, Basnea Boer Baesh. Remember, he told him, it's the time to redeem the Jewish people, you are the man, go to Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu with a good, very healthy gut feelings, understood that if you want to really punish yourself, be a leader of Jews. So he tried to run away from the mission in different excuses. Any excuse that he made, Hashem said, what's your problem? I'll fix your way of talking. No problem. You are the man. One of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu mentioned is this. You sending me to Jews. Jews know how to ask questions. Yeah, if anybody will come even today to you and say, you know what? God revealed himself to me and he sent me to you to tell you to do so, such and so and so. What would be the automatic? If you go to Gentiles, many of them will buy it, no problem. Go to Jews, oh, welcome to the club. You know how many crazy people are in the crazy houses claiming that they talk to angels or talk to God, and some of them are so crazy that they decided that they're God themselves. Welcome to the club. So Moshe Rabbeinu raises here a serious question. Do you really want that Judaism will be based on a story that one person said and ask everybody to believe him? What Hashem answered to this? This is the base of everything. Hashem told him like this. Vayomer, ki ehyeh imach, vezeh lecha haot ki anuchi shlachticha, ba'otziacha et ami Mitzrayim ta'avdun et ha'elokim al ahar hazeh. Go to them, bring them here. Same place. Why it's called Har Sinai? Al Shem Asneh Boer Ba'esh. So it was in the same place. The same place that Moshe Rabbeinu revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, he revealed himself to the Jewish people in Mamad Har Sinai. So bring him here, and the same way, I do not want that the entire thing will be based on the story that you will tell them, because they will have always doubt. So what will be the best way to solve it? Bring them here. And when you bring them here, the same way I'm talking to you, I'll talk to them. The same way you do not have any doubts that I'm talking to you, they will not have doubts that I'm talking to them, and I send you to them. And this is major. This is one of the basic, more than that. When in Parashat Yitro, right before Mamad Har Sinai, Hashem repeats that. He explained why he is doing the Mamad Har Sinai. Look at this passage. ויאמר השם אל משה, הנה אנוכי בא אליך באב וענן, בעבור ישמע העם בדברי עמך וגם בך יאמינו לעולם. Why I'm doing this? Why I'm revealing myself, doing the revelation, a national revelation, not a revelation to one person. This is the problem of every other religion, right? They said that one person has the revelation, and Hashem sent him, or God sent him, to the others. Here I'm going to do something different, said Hashem. I'm going to do a national revelation. Why? Why it's important? Because I want them to see that I'm talking to you. They will not learn from you that you are my messenger. They will see me talking to you. וגם בך יאמינו לעולם. And then their emuna, which needs explanation. What's emuna? Again, we need another 3 or 4 days just to talk about the basic things. What's emuna? Emuna is not just to a blind faith, just to believe in something that could not prove. This is not emuna. This is stupidity. This is irresponsible. Peti yaamin lechol davar. Emuna is what's vegam becha yaaminu leolam. In Kriyat Yam Suf, it mentioned vayaminu baHashem uveMoshe avdo. What is the meaning? They believe that there is Hashem? No. They know that there is Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he went first time to Paro, and he told them, Hashem el kohev rim shlachani elecha, shalach et ami v'yavduni, what Paro says in his words, lo yadati et Hashem, I do not know him, v'gam et Yisrael lo ashebecha. So what was the answer of Moshe Rabbeinu? You do not know, it's a lack of knowledge, fine, it's fixable. And he taught him, he gave him 10 classes, dam tzvardeh kinim ha'ot, and he learned in the hard way. But after that, he knew, Paro, the big ignorant, he knew. If he knew, of course the Yidden that was there knew. They knew. Anybody who saw 10 Eser Makot Mitzrayim in their eyes have no way to deny that there is a Hashem. They knew it. So, Kriyat Yam Suf happened after that. So if they know, what is the meaning of Vayaminu Ba'Hashem uveMoshe Avdo, and more than that, Vayaminu Ba'Hashem uveMoshe, what is the meaning of Vayaminu b'Moshe? They believe that Moshe exists. They saw Moshe. And they're Vayaminu b'Hashem u'b'Moshe, the same thing. So what is it? Vayaminu b'Hashem, not that Hashem exists. Not that Moshe, that they knew. Vayaminu b'Hashem, Vayaminu b'Yecholet. The ability of Hashem to take him from any problem. Because after they were in the dead end, you know, the sea, the desert, the Mitzrayim behind. It seems that they could not do anything. And Hashem split the sea, and they went. Then they believed that He could save them in anywhere. Ve'yaminu ba'Hashem ze lo she'Hashem kayam, that Hashem exists, but she'Hashem yachol atzil otam mikol matzav, bayecholet ha'elokim. Same thing in Avraham Avinu. Hashem promised him that He's going to bring him a son when he was old, and his wife was old. And it's mentioned in the Torah, ve'he'emin ba'Hashem v'yachsheveh lo tzedakah. What's ve'he'emin ba'Hashem? That Hashem exists? He talked to him. He take him out of Kufur Kazdim. He talked to him. It's not emunah that Hashem exists. It's emunah that Hashem could do. And this is what the Rambam says in Hilchot Yesudei Torah about this pasuk. I'll quote the Rambam. The Lashon of the Rambam, Perek Chet, Hilchot Yesudei Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu lo he'eminu bo Yisrael mipnei ha'otot she'asa. She'ama'amin al pi ha'otot yash belibo dofi. She'efshar she'yase ha'ot belat ve'kishuf. He could do it in black magic. Uvame he'eminu bo, says the Rambam, b'ma'amad ar Sinai. She'einenu ra'u ve'lo zar, ve'oznenu sham'u ve'lo acher ha'esh ve'akolot ve'alapidim, ve'ashem omer elav, lech emor lahem kach ve'kach. Ask the Rambam, ומנעים שמעמד הר סיני לבדו הוא הראיה לנבואתו של משה שהיא אמת. From where we know that this is the only thing that proves שהיא הראיה, this is a proof לנבואתו של משה שהיא אמת, שנאמר, this is the lashon of the Rambam, and he quote this pasuk. שנאמר, ויאמר השם אל משה, הנה אנוכי בעליך באבנון, בעבור ישמעם בדברי עמך, וגם בך יאמינו לעולם. Continue the Rambam, and he said like this. וגם בך יאמינו לעולם, מכלל שעד דבר זה, we learn from this that until דבר זה, until מעמד הר סיני, לא האמינו בו אמונה שהיא עומדת לעולם, במשה, בנבואה של משה, אלא נבואה שיש אחריה הרהור ומחשבה. Because you know, maybe he is a super magician. But in מעמד הר סיני, there is no doubt after that. Because they saw that Hashem talked to him and told him, tell them. So Hashem made him his messenger in front of the people that he was sent to.
How did they know that wasn't a magic trick?
What?
How did they know that wasn't a magic trick?
That was what?
The whole Hashem appearing, the voice in the
clouds. Okay, fine. And here, there's another story. We have to know Hilchos Nevuah. We have to know what Nevuah is. In Nevuah, it's clear to the Navi that Hashem is talking to him. And in Ma'amad Sinai, everybody was Navi. They were in the status of Nevuah. And it's mentioned, Ponim Befonim Diber Hashem Imachem Ba'ar Mitoch Ha'esh. Hashem talked to you, you saw in, not in the physical, in the flesh eyes, but in the Hasaga, clearly that Hashem is talking to you. So, that's it. Ma'amad Sinai is the base. Fine. So, the difference between Judaism to all, every other theory, that only the Torah claim that the beginning of the religion, quote, started in a national revelation, not a story that somebody came and tell and you have to believe or not believe it. Everybody saw it. Fine, this is very strong. But the problem is, when you talk to non-from intelligent people, they told you, okay, science sounds, the claim sounds good. The problem is, how do we know that it really happened? Because it's written in the Torah? Who wrote the Torah? Maybe somebody wrote it down. I mean, it's claimed, but we need proofs. How we address such a question? You believe that what's written in the Torah is true. So you get a believer, a blind believer. So here we go into the major thing to prove that the Torah is not a theory that somebody wrote. So what the Torah says? The Torah says it was a national revelation. Many people saw it. How many? Many. According to the Torah, 600,000 men from the age of 20 to the age of 60 was among the people who went out of Egypt. Same number of women. If we talk about families, we talk about 600,000 families. How many kids until the age of 20? Remember why the Egyptians hated us? Because the Jewish families were with many children. Paru v'yishratzu v'yirbu v'yatzmu b'meod meod. So if we assume, and it's easy to assume, that each family has only 10 kids, 600,000 families, we're talking about 6 million people at least. So all of those saw the 10 Esther Makot Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf and Mamad Sinai, and the miracles that happened in the desert for 40 years, right? Man every day to their tent, and the Be'er Miriam, and all these miracles, the Amud HaEsh, Amud HaAnan, all those stories. So now you could say, you know what, who said that this story is true? What's the alternative? But it's all made up. Never happened. No slaves in Egypt, no Kriyat Yam Suf, no Mamad Har Sinai, nothing. So if so, the entire story of the Bible, of the Torah, is a lie. To claim such a thing, you should ask yourself how anybody made this lie? Who was this liar? What was the benefit of this liar from what he invented? And how he convinced so many people, not just Jews, all over the world, that this story is right? If it's all made up, how come nobody even thought that maybe it's not right? And if you say there are people today who deny it, you have to know it's only in the last 300 years. Only the Bible criticism, if you're familiar with this thing. Before that, nobody, not Gentile, not a Jew, in the entire history, has doubts that all these stories are right. To invent these stories, you have to invent history. And we're not talking about history about 40,000 years ago. We're talking about history of 3,000 years ago. Which is far from us, but not in a way that if it's never happened, somebody just could make it up and sell it to all the world. Nobody has doubt about this. But that's not the major thing. It's one of the things that we have to take in consideration when we talk with people who are deniers, right? But, okay. Now, let's go back to this issue. So the Torah claimed that it was at the time, it was, first of all, was here a series of historical events. Talking about events. The Torah described events that either happened or not. We're talking about, or the claim is, that at the time were many, many eyewitnesses. The problem that we're facing today, we ask, you know, let's say the Chaver will be here, the representative of Judaism will be here, and we ask him an objective, relevant question. How do you know that the story is true? Just because it's written? Okay, we have to prove who wrote it. And here we come to this problem. Even if it's true, long time passed since. Even if at the time were eyewitnesses, many, they are not here today to be interviewed to ask them what they really saw and what really happened to them, what they really experienced. And this problem is the problem of any court, even today. Not about the event that happened 3,300 years ago. Something that happened, let's say, 2 weeks ago. A car accident. Imagine that you are a court, two people come to you, and they talk about the car, no injuries, nobody got killed. It's only a matter of money, right? So one person stands and say it was an accident in this intersection, and the problem is that this guy just drove in red and he hit me, and he has to pay me $10,000. The court hears this guy. The other party has, at their turn, the court will say, okay, what do you have to say about it? They talk about the same thing, same day, same hour, same accident. The only thing is, he just didn't stop at a stop sign or something, and he is the cause of this, and he owe me $10,000, right? How the court will decide? The problem is that the people in the court, the judge, weren't 2 weeks ago at the time of they didn't see it. So they hear two claims, how they will decide. So the process is like this. After they make their arguments, the two parties, The court will ask them, okay, prove it. Could you prove it? What is the best proof? Eyewitnesses. If one of them will say, I have 10 people who saw it, and they could come to court and tell you. So if one of them will say, I have eyewitnesses, and the other will say, I didn't see anybody, you have to believe me. For sure, this person who claimed that he has eyewitnesses in a better position, but it's not enough. Because the court will take an account that maybe he paid them, maybe they liars, the eyewitnesses. So without bringing them to court, that the judge will ask them the question to verify if they're saying the truth, it will not be worth a lot. But it's better position in the beginning. So if you compare it, take all the religions of the world. They claim that they have a revelation, but nobody saw it. Only one person say that, now you have to believe it or not. Either you believe him or not. Judaism claim that it was a national revelation. Were many eyewitnesses at the time? What's the problem? They died about 3,300 years ago. So no court today could interview them to verify if they're saying the truth. So the court will ask the Haver, the Rav, the Jewish representative, if they died 3,300 years ago, how do you know? You never met them. So you believe on what your parents told you, on what's written in the Torah. You came back to the same point. You're also a believer. You haven't asked to believe you. And here's the surprise. Could we bring the eyewitnesses today, 3,300 years after, to any court to interview them? Seems impossible, right? But it is. It is possible. We could bring the original eyewitnesses to any court, and they could interview them and verify that they're saying the truth. How it's possible? And here is a long story. That makes this lecture 2 hours. I will just jump to the conclusion. You will have to use your imagination, or if you want, actually I don't have it in English, I have it only in Hebrew, you could hear it or in discs or tapes or whatever. I'll try to say in brief, in really short, even though the details are very, very important over here. We're talking about historical events that at the time when it happened were many eyewitnesses to the event. The problem is that long time passed since, and the original eyewitnesses are not with us anymore. Could we build a system of internalizing the testimony of the original eyewitnesses in documentation and other systems that nobody ever could deny? The answer is yes. And the problem that we usually bring is World War II, the Holocaust, the deniers of the Holocaust, and phenomena, very, very severe and sad phenomena that become more and more popular among anti-Semitists that spread it all over the world, that the Holocaust never happened. Did you hear Ahmadinejad? He knows that the Holocaust never happened. But he's not the only one. In South America, we have people who said that. In Germany, there are neo-Nazis who said that. And they try to make doubt who said, and this is not an event that happened 3,300 years ago. The end of the World War II was 60, 70 years ago. That's it. And they deny it. And many people in the world, they have doubts. Who said? You know, if you take into account the anti-Semitism during the 2,000 years of Christianity, it's not that impossible to convince anti-Semitists or people who do not like Jews that the Jews invent things. And it's growing. Now, what could we do to prove it in a way that nobody will ever deny it? What I mean by that, today we have still few eyewitnesses. They are very old. And if anybody will deny it, we could bring eyewitnesses to any court to give a testimony about what happened to them. And the court will decide if they're liars or not. But what will be in another 20 years? You know, what would be the youngest person today that could give a testimony in court? He should be at least 75. Because the war was ended in 45. We're talking about 63 years since the end of the war, right? So somebody who was 10 years old at the time, right? Today would be 73. And what court in the world will get a testimony and based on this will put people in prison of a kid 9, 10 years old? Even today, about something that happened yesterday. You're talking about something that happened 60 years ago? You're in a big problem. And what will be in another 20 years? In another 50 years? We have a real problem. What are we going to do? And all the other things, other proofs, are very, very difficult to prove in court. Because any document that you will bring, automatically the neo-Nazis will say it's a forgery. And they say
that the Nazis kept documents and records. They were very meticulous about it. How many?
And you know what neo-Nazis says about this? It's forgery. They say it. I have no time, but I could show you a horrible interview with somebody called Ernst Zondel, which is an Austrian, somebody who claimed that he's a researcher, and he claimed that it's all forgery. Never was. They're not denying the war. They're denying that it was a plan by the Nazis to exterminate Jews because they are Jews. That's what they deny. And they claim it. They claim this, and it's really problematic to prove it. Anyway, this is about the Holocaust. But we're talking about, you got the parable? It's the same problem. The only difference are the years. We're talking about 70 years compared to 3,300 years. So what could we do? I'll show you this in short. It's never happened about the Holocaust. Chaval, it's a shame. If it was happened the way I'm going to describe it, that will solve the problem, and any denier will never, even in 100 years from now, could not deny it. Imagine that 40 years after the Holocaust, after 1985, we would gather together as many eyewitnesses that we could get. And at the time, 40 years after, you could get many, let's say a million, from all over the world, eyewitnesses.
Eichmann's trial.
Yeah. Eichmann was
61.
We're talking about 85. Not Bechavana, you'll see later why. 40 years after, okay? We gathered together as many eyewitnesses as we could come from all over the world, asked them to come to give their testimony about what they, in a court, in official court. We put in the head of this court a famous judge with international recognition, and somebody reliable, and they will get the testimony from all those people. Now, the idea will be, I'll skip all this because that will take us a long, long time. This is, by the way, the guy who's denying the Holocaust, and here's the interview, but we'll skip this. Now, we are trying at 85, 40 years after, to make a documentation that documents everything that we know about the Holocaust. So, first of all, gathering the survivors, take from each one of them testimony. The condition will be that who will be only a person who saw firsthand, first eye, direct testimony, not somebody who heard it from somebody else. Now, all these people, aside from the testimony that they give in court, they will go back home, many of them just all their family destroyed by the Nazis, and after the war they remarried and rebuilt their houses. The children that they have was born after, right? They will go back now, after they will come to give their testimony, and give this testimony in front of their children. And they will tell them two things. I was 40 years in Europe ago in Europe, and I saw everything. And 40 years after, I came to, let's say, Eretz Israel, to Tel Aviv, to give the testimony in the court that was document everything. Okay? Two things. I was at the time, and I was under documentation. And you will say that in the documentation, with me, came from all over the world to give testimony, million people from all over the world, and I saw them giving their testimony, okay? Now, writing a book, we'll write all the testimony, document them. Prohibition of change, it will be a condition that after all of those give their what they saw, and we write it, we document it, nobody could change it since now, from now on. Because if, let's say, imagine 5 years after, somebody will say, oh, I was there too, and I got invitation to come to Tel Aviv to give the testimony 5 years ago, but I could not make it because I have business trip to the Far East. I could not make it. But if I was there, I have a different, a major story that it's missing from this document. If we will allow that, they could change everything, right? And it doesn't make sense that million people who was at the time do not know the story. Only one person know it, and he could not make it. It sounds suspicious, right? So no more changes after this will be documented. Now, distribution of the book. This is very important. Each one of the people who came 40 years after will take with him an exact, accurate copy of the original copy that the judge wrote in front of everybody at the time. This way, the documentation will not be one document that will be in the archive of the any place. It will be distributed all over the world. If somebody even, let's say 10 years after or 100 years after, will want to change or one line, even one word, of course, big story, it will be impossible because you will have to get to all these million copies that all spread all over the world, change the same line, and convince everybody that that was in the original. This is impossible. So the distribution of the book is very important. The last thing, center to gather the original testimony, it will be guarded. Okay, this is one thing. If something like that was happened in 1985, that will make the life of the deniers, the neo-Nazis, very difficult. But still, it's only a document. No document in the world, any judicial document, has this condition. It never happened to any other judicial document. Unfortunately for the Holocaust also, it never happened. But soon we will see why I mentioned that. But because we want to give a perfect solution, that will seal hermetically in a way that nobody ever could make doubt, we are not happy and satisfied only with this, even though it's very strong. We do, at the same time, something even more strong to back up this. We took the people that gathered in 85, let's say in Tel Aviv, to give this testimony, and we offer them to build a club. The name of the club will be the Club of Remembering the Memory of the Holocaust. That will be the name of the club. And as every club in the world, they have things to do. They will meet from time to time. They will talk about it. Let's see the conditions that they take as an obligation on themselves in 85, in our imagination story. Right? Rules of the club. Teaching from parents to children. Each one of them will teach the story of the Holocaust, which is the book that was given to everybody, to their children. In places, in Australia, let's say, after they got the testimony, they went back to their places, to America, to South America, to anywhere in the world. Anywhere that there will be more than one person, let's say 10, 100 families, there will be the special schools. In this school, they will teach everything that every other kid in Australia, let's say, learn. But they will dedicate 2 hours every day to the history of World War II and the Holocaust, and they will teach the book of the Holocaust. The children must learn, be familiar with every details, learn it by heart, test it by this. Okay? The other thing, one day in a week, each week they will choose one day for meeting of this club all over the world. In this meeting, they have to gather together, bring 2 things very important: their copy of the original book and the children. And they will gather to a certain place, and in this certain place, one will come and talk about the importance of the memory of the Holocaust. in one of the things, what they will do, they will read the book of the Holocaust in this meeting once a week. Because the details are so many and the book is so big, they will divide it into portions and they will read every week one portion. In this, you win two things. First, learning. The adults and the children that will learn the story, they learn the school, now they meet in this meeting of it. And another thing, another very, very strong thing. Because we're talking about a system that we want to build for hundreds of years ahead. If you take a book and read it every day, every week, what's going to happen to the book? It will tear, right? Some of the letters will just disappear or with the use of it. So what do you have to do? Rewrite it. What happened to a document that you rewrite it? It's natural that even the exact, accurate writer, rewriter, will miss one word, one letter. In this way, when you come to this places that you gather every week, one person will read the portion, the other will take their copies, and they will follow, and it will be one mistake. Immediately you could know which copy is not right. Okay? So there are two things that you're going to win by this. The other thing, symbol on the clothing. Because, you know, every club has uniforms, here all these people decided that every clothes that they're going to buy, they put them in the yellow star to show that that belongs to this club. Symbol on the heart and symbol on the door. Aside from the big book that will have all details, we'll take three cards, and those three cards, we will, small cards, like a business card, something that you could put in your pocket of the shirt. On these three cards will be written the major principle of the club. Why three? One, to put in your left pocket of the shirt, and everybody, every member of the club, every morning before they go to work, they will put their hand on their heart and they will swear, we will never forget our mission to remind everybody about the memory of the Holocaust, so nobody will deny it ever. Because each one of us has two tools to relate to the world around us. One is the emotion, which is the heart, but the other is the mind. So we'll take the other card and put it on the mind and we'll swear we'll not forget, not in our mind, not in our heart. Okay? The third card will be put in each door of every house of a member of the club. So anybody that goes into the seat will realize here lives a member of the club. Now, because we want that our club will last forever, the members take on themselves to get married only in the club. Why? Because it's very important that they will go to the next generation. If they will intermarriage with other people who are not in the club, what's going to happen? Our club is going to be finished after a few generations. So they will be married only inside the club. What if somebody wants to marry somebody out of the club? It's not recommended, but it's not impossible. In a thorough condition, that the outsider that comes from outside will join the club, will understand, and be part of it, and if he's really honest, welcome. And this way, we will be sure that it will go to the next generation. Now, teachers, right? Everybody who's in Chinuch knows that if you want that your students really will grasp and take what you teach them, it's very important that it will not be just in the environment of the classroom, abstract. You have to give them to experience it. For example, if I'm teaching geography, and I'm teaching about Nevada Desert, or Niagara Falls, right? As a teacher, as a good teacher, that's really important for me. Even if I'm a good teacher, the students love what they say. And if I want them to remember this to the end of their life, I will push that the trip at the end of the year will be to the Niagara Falls. And I will take them there, and I shall remember what we learned in the class. Look at this. They will experience it. When you experience it, internalize it, right? So three festivals will be to those people who are the members of this club. One festival will be the liberation of the camp. In certain time, let's say January 20, if we're talking about the Holocaust, when Auschwitz was released by the Russians, every member of the club all over the world will set their house as a concentration camp, will put the pajamas of the prisoners on the people of the house, and for a few days will sit on the ground and drink only water and dry bread. Dry rye bread. And when the children will say, "We want pizza," the mother or the father will say, "Next week. Today, we want you to experience." That was the way our forefathers were when the Russians redeemed them from the Nazi Machanot. The other club will be the foundation of the foundation day. And one day, the day that actually the documentation happened in 85, they will take a break from work. They will come to the place that every week they gather together. They will bring their children. They will bring the books. They will not sleep all night. They will learn or read with the kids the entire book of the Holocaust from the beginning to the end all night. That will be an experience that any kid will remember to the end of his life. The last festival is a very fun one. Journey to the Land of Israel. In this festival, every head of family going to the closest marina, take a boat, put the family on it, and go to the ocean. You could write down on the boat, Altalena, Struma, the boats that brought the survivors from Europe to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So imagine something like this happened in 85. Now, 20 years passed, 50 years passed, 100 years passed. Neo-Nazis will come and say, "Never happened." We'll bring them a document. They have to explain how this document exists. If it's a forgery, how anybody could make such a forgery? And this is a very important point. The original documents were given to the people who experienced the thing. And if it's a lie, nobody will accept it. If I might invent something that never happened, I could not ever convince you to take it and give it to your children and believe that it's really happened to you when it's never happened to you and die for it. Especially not if you're Jewish. And for Gentiles, you couldn't sell them anything. But for Jews, forget it. So we're talking about the original generation that experienced the events and the documentation of the events and the unbroken chain. If in the middle, for let's say 40, 50, 100 years, it was a hole in the chain, that will be worth nothing. But if it will be going from generation to generation, that will be the proof. I mean, what you could do with that? So we have a document with all these conditions, and we have the club. If it's not true, why? How those people doing this all over the world under an amazing, unbelievable conditions? And we know the history. It's never happened in 85, unfortunately. But it happened big time, much bigger, 3,300 years ago. Who built this club? Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the 40 years. And this is the end of the lecture. But let me show you the psukim that you know. But it's one by one, all these conditions in the Torah. Let's start from the document. Just briefly, you know, you're familiar with that. Moshe Rabbeinu gathered everybody. That's the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Ela Dvarim asher diber Moshe kol Yisrael. Vayi ba'arba'im shana, ba'ashtasar chodesh, ba'achad lachodesh. Moshe gathered everybody at the end of the 40 years, and he review with them everything that happened to them with him during the 40 years. Esar makot Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, Mamad Har Sinai, all the Sefer Dvarim. Who were there? Atem nitzavim hayom kulchem. Rashechem, shivtechem, ziknechem, v'shotrechem, kol ish Yisrael. Everybody. What is there? Mamad Har Sinai, Esar makot Mitzrayim, הנייה כדבר הגדול הזה, הוא הנשמע כמוהו, השמע עם מדבר, כל אלוקים מדבר מתוך האש, כאשר שמעת אתה ויחי, או הניסה אלוקים לבוא לקחת לו גוי מקרב גוי, 10 מכות מצרים. Direct testimony, the Torah mentioned that few times. ויקרא משה על כל ישראל ואומר להם, אתם ראיתם, you saw, אשר עשה השם לעיניכם, בארץ מצרים, לפרעה לכל עבדיו. והולך אתכם, now we're talking at the end of the 40 years, you remember how did you eat in the last 40 years? What was the condition of your clothing, your shoes? והולך אתכם 40 שנה במדבר, לא בלוס על בנותיכם מעליכם, נהלכה לא ברתה מעל רגליך, לחם לא אכלתם, יין ושחר לא שתיתם, למען תדעו כי אני השם אלוקים. And this is very strong. Why? Because again, we know that the Jewish people were very stubborn. נכון? עם קשה עורף. They made a lot of troubles to Moshe Rabbeinu. But they never denied this. That it was a miracle existing for 40 years in the desert. Nobody ever has doubt about this. Even the Kshei Oref. And they bring this and pass it to their children. And they told their children, if anybody will try to convince you that it's not true, even to erase one letter, be ready to die. And they did it. Right? Direct testimony. ויקרא משה על כל ישראל ואומר להם here, לא את אבותינו קראת השם את הברית הזאת. כי איתנו, אנחנו אלה פה היום, כולנו חיים. פנים בפנים דיבר השם עמכם, השם talk to you. רק ישמר לך ושמור נפשך מאוד פן, תשכח את הדברים אשר ראו עיניך, והודעתם לבניך ולבני בניך. So that's the mitzvah of the Torah, and you know the mitzvahs. איזה עוד מצווה בתורה has such an azhara? ישמר לך, שמור נפשך מאוד פן, תשכח את הדברים אשר ראו עיניך. Not about Yom Kippur, not about Pesach, not about anything. But don't forget Mamad Sinai and pass it to your kids. Written of the book. In Sefer Shmot Hashem, in principle, told Moshe Rabbeinu, כתוב לך את הדברים האלה, כי על פי הדברים האלה קראתי את חברית ואת ישראל. At the end of Sefer Dvarim, פרק למד א', והיא כחלות משה לכתוב את דברי התורה הזאת על ספר התובן, he wrote down everything, and the Ramban bring the Medrash, שהתורה הייתה כתובה באש שחורה על גבי אש לבנה, והיה משה רבנו כותב כסופר המעתיק מספר קדמון וכותב. So משה רבנו wrote the entire Torah and he gave it to עם ישראל. In the Torah, לא תוסיפו ולא תגרו. Prohibition of change. The last mitzvah in the Torah is to write ספר תורה. כתבו לכם את השירה הזאת. All the ספרי תורה that we have today all the shul, all over the world are copies of copies of copies of copies of the original copies. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote down in his handwriting 13 copies of the Torah from Bereshit ad Le'enei Kol Yisrael, and he gave each Shevet a Sefer, and the 613 mitzvah is to rewrite Sefer Torah. And this is amazing by itself, that after 2,000 years almost, most of the time no connection between the Jewish communities. Every community has a separate Torah. Now that we have ways to make connection with all the Jews all over the world, we could find that we have the exact same Sifrei Torah. No separate Torah that has a story or a chapter that not exists in the others. This is amazing. This is a miracle by itself. That the Torah, before the computer, before, you know, when it was rewrite in handwriting, is the exact copies of the same thing. ויכתוב משה את התורה הזאת ויתנה אל הכהנים בני לוי, that was his tribe, ואל כל זקני ישראל. כל זקני ישראל, each ראש שבט קיבל עותק, got a copy, okay? And the ספר תורה of the Levim, השם told, משה רבנו told them, put them near Aron HaKodesh, when Mishkan was built in the first year of the 40 years. And in the Mishkan, during the 40 years, the Levim and the Kohanim took the Mishkan, and in Aron HaKodesh was the Luchot v'Shivrei Luchot for 40 years. At the end of the 40 years, he taught them, לקוח את ספר התורה הזה, ושמתם אותו מצד ארון ברית השם אלוקיכם, והיה שם בך לעד. ארון העדות. עדות על מה? Eyewitnesses, that edus, testimony about the event of Mamad Har Sinai. This is the document. Now the club. ושיננתם לבניך ודיברת בם ושבתך בביתך ובלכתך בדרך. Teaching from parents to children. Shabbat. This is something I'm always get excited when I'm saying. You know, we grew up from and we do a lot of things, you know, naturally. But when you really understand, grasp even the very artificial thing of it, we're talking about testimony that were given during the history. Think about it. For 3,300 years, all over the world, Friday night, Jewish family gathered together to a festive meal. Before they start the meal, the head of the family takes a cup of wine and make a kiddush. And what they say, what we say in the kiddush? Why are we doing this? Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim. Zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim. So, a head of a family, in front of his children, in all ages, give a testimony about the event called the Yetziat Mitzrayim. Why are we doing this? Because we saw it in our parents' house. Why our parents do that? Because they saw it in their parents' house. Until when? Until the generation that went out of Egypt. Because you could not memorize event that never happened. So we're doing this testimony. Aside from that, in Shabbat, what are we doing in Shabbat? We're going to shul. We read the Torah. We read the Torah. I mean, you have that. But for Nachum who see that, he is in shock, intellectual shock. I have to tell you that after this lecture, when I give it incomplete, people come to me 10 years after and say, we will never forget this. That was the thing that made it for us to prove. In one of the seminars, as I told you before, okay, we have to finish in 5 minutes. As I told you before, we deal with a tough group, Israelis, anti, right? So I'll just tell you one story. In one of the seminars, after I finish almost all this lecture, one stubborn guy stand up and say, you know, you promised us at the beginning of the lecture that you're going to bring us the original eyewitnesses. It's never happened yet. Then after all you heard, okay, you want me to just make a meeting between you and one of the original eyewitnesses? He said yes. Okay, go to your room. It was a hotel. Stand in front of the mirror. Look, you will see him. It's you. Why? Or how? You are not from, right? What did you do last Pesach? Where were you in the Seder? So even if he was in the kibbutz, he ate matzah. They eat matzah. Just for food. Why? Are you crazy? Even as a cracker, it's not good. So why you eat? I don't know. It's a tradition. I heard it. I saw it by my parents. You know, I want at least this. And your father, why he did that? He saw it by his father. Now tell me until when? He saw it by their father. And what we say? That this is the bread that the people who went out of Egypt ate because it was no time to complete it to be a bread. Right? Imagine that it's not true. The story is not true, right? Who could convince Jews to do such a stupid thing? Jews! And I told him like this, you know what? I'll finish with that. I could prove to you that what we do in Gilal HaSeder is a complete, simple truth that the event happened. Because if it never happened, you know when you could make me have doubt maybe it's not happened? Did you ever heard about Yetziat Brazil? I said, no. What is this? Are you serious? What? You do not know? It's a big hole in your knowledge. Listen, 400 years ago, the Jewish community in Brazil suffered a big, dangerous anti-Semitism phenomenon. They have a charismatic leader, and he said, we have to stop it. We cannot take it anymore. It's very dangerous. So he gathered all the Jews in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro, and he told them, we have to get out of here. So He gathered them in the near the ocean. He raised his hand. The ocean split. And they went all the way for 40 days. And they end up in Yafo 400 years ago. When they came to Yafo, it was Tuesday, 2 p.m. The Jewish community, the small Jewish community at the time in Yafo, was very happy for the people who were coming to live with them from Brazil, Yidden from Brazil. So they accept them over there with dance, and they give them two things, a borekas and a can of Coke. And since then, every Tuesday, 2 p.m., Jews do kiddush on a can of Coke and a borekas. Don't you know about this? You never heard about this? He said, no. Don't you know why? Because it's never happened. But did you ever heard about kiddush in Lel Shabbat? Did you ever heard about Leila Seder? Yes. You do it? Yes. You know why? Because it's happened. It happened. So let's just finish the psukim. One day of the week of spirituality, tefillin, kshatam lot al yadecha, what's written over there? Yetziat Mitzrayim, ki biyad chazaka utziyacha shel Mitzrayim, וכתבתם על מזוזות ביתך ובשעריך, ציציס, למען תזכרו. פרובינים אינטרמריד, ולא תתחתן בם, ביתך לא תיתן לבנו, ביתו לא תיקח לבניך. And the Chagim, it's written, you know, in the Torah we have mitzvot, chukim, mishpatim, ve'edot. Ela chukim, ha'mishpatim, ve'ha'edot. What's edot? It's a kind of mitzvot that, by the way, it's a edus. The Moadim, called Moadim because of this. Ele Moadeh Hashem Asot Tikru Ota Mikrei Kodesh. Vezachart ki Eved Hayita Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Shavuos, on Pesach, Lo Tochal Alav Chametz, Leman Tizkor Et Yom Tzidcha Be'eretz Mitzrayim. The Torah says clearly, Leman Tizkor, and in Sukkot it's very, very clear. Basukkot Yishbo Shivat Yamim, Leman Yed'u Dorotechem Yed'u Lo Ya'aminu. It's not a belief, it's a knowledge. The next generations, ki Basukkot Hashavti Yedna Yisrael, so, we know it. So we have it. We have the testimony, the document. We have the club with all the rules, all the mitzvahs. And we're ready for any court case that will happen ever in the history. Nobody could deny it. And that's what Yeshayahu Navi says, Atem Eidai Nehum Hashem. There's a document called Aron Ha'edut, Luchot Ha'edut. And the people, the nation, אתם עדיין הוא משהו.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.